Everything you need?
All right.
Hi, I'm Cindy. I'm an alcoholic. All right. So I don't know where I'm going to go with this, which is going to be kind of interesting for me. Normally I kind of, when someone has asked me to speak, I start thinking about, just kind of think about my past and where I am. And for some reason, I don't know whether it's Christmas and I've just been busy, but it just hasn't hit me. We left a friend of ours that's in the a couple that's in the program, and they had they always have a New Year's Day open house, and they end it at 4 o'clock with a meeting. And while I was there, and I was talking to somebody, they said somebody mentioned that I was speaking today here, and they said, and he asked me, he said, "Do you get nervous?" And I said, "You know, it's interesting. I hadn't thought that I was nervous until it was time to leave to go to the party, and I couldn't find anything that I really wanted to wear, and I was a little flustered about that. No, this doesn't look right, and I'm just going to change into what's comfortable for me." And I realized, yes, I am nervous. That's how it just shows up sometimes. The fears and things kind of come out sideways sometimes. And that's a good thing for me. If I think the day that I'm not nervous when I get up here to speak is the day that I think I've got it, and I know for a fact I've watched too many people, if they think they've got it, that just is, you get things in here and you get it a moment, but you don't, like, get it, you know, kind of thing. And so I hope I never get there. That's a personal opinion. I will tell you my sobriety date is August 22nd, 1992. I do have a home group. It's Keep It Simple. It meets in Fishersville, Virginia, on Sundays at 10 o'clock at the Community Care Building. That's it's part of Augusta Health. So if you're ever in the area and you're looking for a meeting on Sunday at 10, come on, we'd love to have you there. I've been a member of that home group, I'm going to say, for about 7 years. And I have a sponsor who I talked to yesterday, and I do sponsor women. So I try to stay active. I don't have a job per se in my home group, but I just finished I had a 2-year GSR position. So that just ended. So all those things are things that you taught me to do. It helps keep me sober. It helps keep me connected with Alcoholics Anonymous. And so if you don't have a home group and you're looking for one, find one, because it is the place where I wasn't told I had to do this. I just watched people do it, that they suited up and showed up for their home group. They were always there. And unless, of course, I mean, things happen. We go out of town, people get sick, holidays, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I knew who was going to be at my home group. You knew where they were going to sit, okay? Because people have a tendency to sit, in the same place all the time. So, and that was comforting for me when I first got sober, to know that when I walked in the rooms, that there were certain people I was always going to see. And so I'm grateful for them. So I try to do the same thing, because that was what was done. One of the things that was done for me is people suited up and showed up. My first sponsor, who I saw this summer, back in Nelson County, we went to a festival, a music festival there, which Locken, I don't know if you've ever heard of it anyway, so this big music festival, but they also have AA meetings there. So I went up to my old home group, and there was my sponsor, who's in her 80s, and she was suiting up and showing up and for the meeting, and so there would be a meeting there, and I'm grateful for that. But that's what she's always done. You know, she does the same thing. She just showed me that those are things that you do, and she continues to do them. So that's pretty amazing. Supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I always say, what always cracks me up, when people would get up to speak, and I'd go, "Man, they have great sponsors. How do they know?" Because they'd get up and they say, "I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now." And I thought they just had brilliant sponsors, and they knew exactly what to do. And that's just really, short, sweet, and to the point. This is what I'm going to do. And how do they know that? Because I don't. And then one day we're reading How It Works, and I'm like, "Well, daggone, there it is, right there in How It Works. It says that's what we do, and we tell our stories." And so that's what I'll do. Hopefully I will do the what it was like pretty quickly, because because most of us, and I've heard people say this before, most of us know how we got here. We know how to drink. That's one thing we know. We know how to do it well. Gets us in trouble, and that's why we're here. But we all know how to put drink to mouth. So I started drinking at 13, and this always cracks me up. I'm a Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill kind of girl, so my first drink, yeah, see, there's always, it's like, how many of us started on Boone's Farm? That just cracks me up. So there were two boys that were 22 years old enough to buy alcohol. There were three of us still in high school, which I was in eighth grade at the time, and they went and bought us Boone's Farm, and that evening we camped out in the back of one of the girls' homes, and we drank. Now, the interesting thing for me is I drank the first, and that would have been probably the first time there was no adult around to watch. I'd had alcohol before, but it was always a little juice glass. My mother and father, I never saw them drink a whole lot. My mother, not hardly at all. And my dad, actually, the first time I saw him drunk was at my first wedding, and I think he was not happy. But anyway, so I drank the whole bottle. Now, they did not. I drank the whole bottle, and the next day we got up and went into a cemetery, and they were throwing up, and I wasn't. I got French kiss for the first time, so I knew what alcohol could do for me, and it was just like, oh, my gosh, it just opened up the world. So It was just one of those moments of clarity, what alcohol could do for me. And so I continued to drink. I drank, and not a lot, you know, because when you're in school and you're dependent on other people for alcohol, you can't always get what you want when you want it, how you want it. Now, I did have an older sister who liked to drink, and we partied a lot together when I graduated from high school and then into college a little ways. And then she actually got married and had kids and, you know, did the adult thing. I don't know how you do that, but she did, and moved on with her life. Me, I continued to drink. Now, I moved on with my life. I graduated from college barely. I had to call my parents. Because of my drinking, I didn't study a whole lot. I wanted to party versus actually go to, you know, I did usually go to class. That's the interesting thing. I would go to class, but, you know, when you left class in college, they actually expect you to work, you know, and do some stuff. And that's that's just asking a bit much. So I did like to party, so I would go out and party. So the week before I was to graduate from college, I had to call my parents and say, hold the boat. I might not be graduating. I had to go back and retake two exams. I was just fortunate that I passed those two exams. And they let me through that. I think they just felt sorry for me, and they let me through, so I graduated. And went on from that point to find work. I have always been fortunate in that I have always worked. So even through the alcoholism and even through the drinking, I maintained jobs. I am a firm believer if I continued to drink that probably would not have been the case. But for me, I got sober at 30. Okay, I always have to stop. I was 33. So I was still, at 33, I think I was still able to physically, I could handle some of the things that were going on. And I could get up in the morning with a bad hangover. And I could go to work and not get sleep and still continue to. Now, was I a good worker? I can tell you, not a chance. But did I suit up and show up? Yes, that I did do. So I can only remember once or twice calling in because I was so sick from a hangover that I could not make it to work. But I did do that. So I have to be honest that alcohol, that I did, you know, that did happen. So anyway, so I worked. I'm an educator. And I've done some other things also, but that's the major profession that I've been in. And I tell you that not just because we talk about the fact that alcoholism has no boundaries. We can be in any profession, do any type of job, and we can be an alcoholic. And so it really knows no bounds. So don't think just because, and I think for a while it was because I am this, or because I've maintained a job, or because I haven't had a DUI and I haven't gone to jail, that I can't possibly be an alcoholic. And the fact of the matter, that's not true. When I take that, Big Book makes it very simple for us. When I take that first drink, I can't stop. And when I want to stop, I can't. You know, it took me a while when I came in the program to understand the obsession of the mind, but I had it all the time, because I'd get up in the morning to go to work and I'd be thinking about the drink later. When am I going to drink? Who am I going to drink with? What am I going to drink? How am I going to get it? Do I have enough money with me? So those types, that obsession was there. And I just had to sit in these rooms long enough to go, Oh, you mean when I buy alcohol over here? Because I lived in the country, so people knew you, and they knew me partly because of my profession. But, okay, so I'll buy alcohol over here, and then the next day I'll buy it over here, and then the next day I'll buy it over here, because I don't want anybody to know that I have a problem with alcohol. And it's funny, one of the stores I ran into the son of one of the owners of one of the country stores that I used to go, and I would go in teetotal, plastered. And I don't know how I thought I was really holding it together and nobody could tell that I was drunk. But he made some comment to me. I ran into him one day, and I wish I could remember the comment he made, but what I recognized was he knew. I wasn't hiding anything from anybody. And a good friend of mine said, after I told her that I was going to try Alcoholics Anonymous, she said, "Well, I knew you were drinking too much." Really? Well, you know, why, nobody was telling me these things. So it took a while for that to kind of to become clear to me, to have that moment of clarity. So I continued. I got married. I've been married twice. So my first marriage, I went through a divorce drunk, and then my second marriage, I went through sober. And I can tell you, it's a whole lot easier. Even divorce, even things that aren't happy, are a heck of a lot easier sober than they are drunk. You know, my first divorce gave me an excuse to drink, and I drank a lot because, oh, woe is me, now I deserve to drink. You know, you can spin it any way you want to. And so I drank a tremendous amount there. But the good thing for that was I went into a relationship with another alcoholic, because I'm telling you, when I'm drinking, I'm not going to pick a sober person, because that just wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. You might have initially, like before it got really bad, but at that point my drinking was not, just simple let's go party kind of stuff. And so the person that I was with at the time was an alcoholic. It was not happy. It was not a happy relationship. But I kind of got stuck in it, and I didn't know how to get out, and I didn't know that I had a right to get out, that I just needed to. And I wasn't even married. Good figure. You know how our minds are just crazy. So we went down to Manio, North Carolina, and went out to drink with a bunch. He used to be a fisherman at one time, and we went out with a bunch of fishermen one night, he left and I stayed, and he was mad at me, but I couldn't understand why. Because when I'm drinking, I am the belle of the ball, and I am a lot of fun, and I'm going to talk to anybody, and I'm going to flirt with you, whether it's right or wrong. That's just what comes out. And he did not like that at all. He was a very possessive individual. So when I got back to the place that I was staying, as soon as I walked in the door, he just hit me right in the face. We were talking about this the other day with a group of women, and then continued to hit me and to drag me around and to pull me by my hair and all this. But I went kind of into a blackout. I've learned later that when trauma is going on, a lot of times you will black out, just so your body can, your mind and your body and your emotions can handle that. And so the thought was, I'm going to die right here, and nobody knew where I was. Nobody was going to know where I was. My family didn't have a clue. And at some point, I heard this voice that was outside of the house going, "You can't treat a woman that way," and everything stopped. And I ran out of the house. I got up because he had me down on a bed. I think he was choking me at the time. And I got up and I ran out of the house, and I ran into the arms of a guy that was about this tall, And it turns out he was a boat captain. Captain Whalen was his name. And he took me over to his house. He let me call my sister. Now, I'm going to tell you, I got a potty mouth, all right, when I'm drinking. I can sometimes have it when I'm not drinking. I try not to. Yeah, okay. So things don't get perfect right away. Sometimes some things take longer than others. But he let me call my sister. I called. She was on her. It was her anniversary, so she and her husband were gone, and I left this scathing thing going, where are you, why aren't you at home, this has happened to me, and you should be there, and you know how self-centered we are here, you know, I put myself in this position because of my alcoholism, and I think you should be there for me, and then I called friends of mine in Nelson County, and I ended up going back home. But it's crazy, because you think, I thought, on the way home, I thought, I want a policeman to pull me over, because now I'm trashed, all right? Why I thought this was a good idea, I don't know, because I wanted him to pull me over so I could send him back to the guy that was, might have been drunk, but he was in a house and not behind the wheel of a car, and go get him because he's a really bad man, and look what he did to me. Well, nobody pulled me over, thank goodness, because I would have been the one that to have gotten in trouble, not him. And so I got back to Nelson County. My friends put me up. My sister came home to that voicemail and had no idea where I was and whether I was even alive until I finally gave her a call and said, no, I'm fine. This is okay. So the interesting thing about all that, and the only reason I tell that story, number one, I have never been in that position since then, okay? Okay, and I got sober shortly after, that I know that I never have to do that again. And the second thing is, that's the individual that took me to my first meeting. So how does that work? I don't know, and I don't know why. But I continued to drink, and then his name was Eddie, and Eddie came back to Nelson County because he stayed at his parents' house there, and he had some of my stuff, and we hooked back up. And the day that I walked on the porch of his parents' house, and he was swinging in a swing, and he looked at me and he said, I've been going to AA. He said, I have a problem with alcohol. Don't you think you have one too? And he is absolutely the only person that could have said that to me, that knew exactly how I drank, knew exactly how crazy I could get, knew who I was as far as being an alcoholic and could say that. And I went, yes. And the relief in that is, you know, you don't quite, when you're in the middle of all that stuff, sometimes you don't know who you are. You don't know what's going on. You don't know why things are happening the way they're happening. And you can't figure it out. And it was that moment, again, that moment of clarity, a good clarity at this time. And so I went back to my first meeting. I was seeing a counselor at that time. You know, we're not poor counselors that have to see us because we lie to them. You know, the counselor I was seeing at the time said, Do you know, they're going to ask, do you have any problems with alcohol? No. Why do you, you know? I would leave there and go get drunk. So she couldn't help me until I was ready to help myself. So I went back to see her one last time, and I said, I know what my problem is. And she said, what is it? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. And she handed me a meeting list, and the paper at the time, I was talking to somebody about this today, the papers used to carry meetings, where the meetings were and stuff, and she said it's also in the paper. So I went to my first meeting. I was back in Nelson County, didn't want to be too close to home, didn't want people to know I'm an alcoholic, so I went back down to Manio, North Carolina, and went to my first meeting there. And the thing that I remember from that first meeting is my idea of an alcoholic was someone who was older, okay, so I'm 33, male, lives under a bridge, wears a trench coat, not clean, and drinks Mad Dog 2020. That's an alcoholic as far as I'm concerned. And in that meeting, there was a guy who had lived under a bridge. I don't know what he drank. I don't know whether he ever wore a trench coat, but he had lived under a bridge, and he was sober, and he was articulate, and he was seemed to be relatively happy. And I thought, if that guy can do it, I can do it. So he gave me the hope that I needed to stick around. So I came back home to Nelson County and started going to meetings. My first meeting was at the Oak Ridge Group. My second meeting was at the Oak Ridge Group in Nelson County. That became my home group and was my home group. I've moved around a little bit, so that was my home. That was my first home group, and that's where those people suited up and showed up, and I saw them. Elgin every day, even when he was sick, and he died several years ago, but. Even when he was so sick that I would have to go and get him, and I would go and I would be afraid I was going to drive up, look in the window, and he was going to be dead, and I was going to, you know, have to call people and stuff. But he was the one. He was always there. He was always there, and he would always tell the same stories all the time. But they were the stories that I knew. That's what made me know him and be familiar with him. So he's one that would call me and go, what are you doing? And I'm going, well, really nothing right now, Elgin. And he'd go, well, meet me down at the, there was a building with a rainbow on it. Meet me at the building with a rainbow and we'll go into Lynchburg and go to a meeting. Okay. I don't think anybody said you never say no to AA. I just didn't have anything else to do. I didn't sometimes didn't really want to do it, but at the same time, what else was I going to do in an evening? So I would just drive down to the building with rainbow and we'd go to meetings wherever. And so I remember going to my first Christmas party, which was also in Lynchburg, and one of the ladies that was there all the time, she's crazy. She's a crazy, crazy lady. Love her to death. And she's passed on. But she had me write because I did. When I got into the rooms, I heard people say, and I always say this because it scares me. They'll say, if you are in a relationship, don't get out for the first year. If you're not in a relationship, don't get in one for the first year. Well, I was in a relationship, so Eddie and I got back together, by the way. Okay, so we're dating again. Go figure. You don't get well right away. So and so here I'm in this abusive relationship, and I think I have to stay because now you guys are telling me, or somebody was telling me, that's what I heard, that I had to stay in for a year. And I remember after a meeting one time, I just sat and I just cried in the meeting and I cried after the meeting. And Nora took me aside and we went back into this little room with little kids' seats that were about that tall from the ground. And she said, what's going on? And I told her, I said, well, I can't get out of this relationship. And she said, honey, this is an abusive relationship. Absolutely. You get out of this relationship. I went, oh, darn. Okay, so she taught me that I had some rights as an individual that I didn't know I had. Fast forward a year. I've learned a lot in AA. I've learned a lot about being who I am and being okay with that as a sober individual. All right, I know that through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll get there in a second. But the other thing that happened to me, I turned 1 year sober. And if you've ever heard of people talk about 13-stepping, there was a guy that kept asking me. I moved to a cabin up in the mountains of Amherst County. And when the guy that moved me was a relative of my brother-in-law's cousin, and he took me up to this cabin and he said, don't you want any friends? I don't know. I just moved into this cabin. It was a great spiritual experience for me and a spiritual time for me. So this guy kept asking me where I lived, and I wouldn't tell him. And one day he showed up. And I'm there with two dogs and a cat, and he scared the bejeebies out of me because I knew him from meetings. I didn't think he would hurt me, but he knew where I lived, and I felt very, very uncomfortable about that. So when he finally left, because finally I honestly had to be somewhere, and I said, I have to be somewhere, and so I've got to go. And he finally left, and I never took him inside. My two big dogs stayed right beside me on either side, and he sat in a chair on the front porch, and I didn't even offer for him to come in. I just wanted him to go away. So I called my sponsor, and I told her what happened, and she said, this is what I want you to do. She said, I want you to call him, and I want you to tell him never to step foot on your property again. I said, oh, yes, ma'am. All right. And she said, and then I want you to go to a meeting tonight. I said, okay, because I really didn't want to go to a meeting. I just wanted to isolate after that happened. And so I called him. I really wanted his wife to answer the phone. Because, but that's, you know, that's that retaliation kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. See, I tell you, I'm not a retaliator, but that in that moment, yes, I will. I am. Oh, well, God, I wish I could tell you I'm not, but those thoughts do still come in my mind. So anyway, she didn't, but he did, and I told him I never wanted him to step foot on my property again, and he didn't. He stayed away. Went to that meeting, and I shared in a general way what had happened. I did not mention his name. The men in that meet, one of the men in the meeting, he asked me, he said, were you thinking about not coming back to AA? And I said, well, that occurred to me because that was scary. And he said, that stuff happens everywhere. And if you're going to stay away from AA because something that could happen, and when you think about it, how many places do we put ourselves as alcoholics? You know, when we're drinking, I put myself anywhere. But as a sober person, I guess I just didn't expect life to hit me to be like that. But it is. And so what my sponsor taught me was you keep going to meetings and that you have a right to set a boundary. And so I did. And those men would have beaten them up if I'd given them the name. You know, they were like, you don't stop going to meetings, and if you want us to talk to him, we will. They wouldn't have beaten him up, but they would have talked to him about the behavior. And so I learned that in AA that I was going to be okay, regardless of the things that happened. That was a big lesson to learn early in the program. So I continued to go to meetings. I moved down to Virginia Beach for a period of time. That's where I did my first four step. And I listened to a guy. He is also, God, everybody dies, but he has also passed away. He was the archivist for Oklahoma, and he did a workshop in Virginia Beach about how to do a four-step and how to do a thorough four-step. So I did that. Now, because I'd moved to Virginia Beach, I changed, my sponsor told me I needed to get a sponsor down there, so I did. And I did my first, I did my four-step. I can tell you right now, it was not the best four-step on this earth, but I did it to the very best of my ability, and that's all that mattered at that time. I exposed the things that I needed to expose, and I called my sponsor up because I knew she was getting ready to go out of town, and I said, I said, I know you're getting ready to go out of town. I've got my four-step ready, but when you get back, give me a call, and we'll meet up at some point, and I'll do my four-step, my fifth-step with you. And she said, how about tonight? Actually, it might have been tomorrow. She wasn't leaving right away. I misunderstood that. And so I ended up either that night or the next night, I ended up going to her apartment to do my fifth step with her. And, you know, it didn't matter that it wasn't perfect. It really made absolutely no difference. What I was able to tell her, there were two secrets that I had kept. And I didn't know how people would respond to me with those secrets. And so I told her those secrets. And here's where the spirituality part, and I saw this happen repeatedly in AA, where I picked the absolutely right person. She had the same experience. And she was able to share with me what she did. Now, I had to go back through that again later, but that was okay because she at least gave me that relief of telling somebody something that I didn't want to tell them, and they didn't hate me for it. They didn't look down their nose at me for it. They loved me unconditionally I've heard somebody say it's not unconditional love, it's just plain old love. So, and she loved me in spite of that. So I did that. Now, here's the thing, the next day, that relief was tangible for me. I got in the car. I was living at Virginia Beach. I had to drive from Virginia Beach to Norfolk. I hated it because I hated the traffic. I was used to the country. I didn't like, and the ships were in, I think. So the traffic was like huge. And I always had to get off, and I hated getting off on this one place because it was scary for me. So I always drove with my hands really tight on the steering wheel. And that day, I realized I wasn't tense. I felt like I was going to be okay. Everything was going to be okay, you know. And it was from doing that fifth step. It was being willing to share with another person the good, the bad, and the ugly, and to move on from there. Well, I didn't do my... She sent me home to do 6 and 7 exactly as it was written in the big book. And I'm telling you what, I fell asleep and probably slept better than I had slept in a long time. So what we didn't work on were the amends process. So I moved back to Nelson County again with a new sponsor because I'm back in the county again and talked to her about the process. And she said she had never had that experience. She had never gone through the steps through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we listened to Joe Hogg tapes, and we walked through the steps again. And when we got to 8 and 9, we talked about making amends. And I went to make some amends pretty bad. I didn't do a great job. I learned later some more things and had to go back and do some amends again, but that's okay. I will tell you this, though. The first amends I made was not with a sponsor. I'd been sober for a very short period of time, and I knew I needed to make amends to my first husband. So no sponsor, nobody telling me anything about the amends process, except that it was part of the 12 steps. And I went to my ex-husband, and I said, I didn't care about making an amends. What I wanted to know is whether or not he thought I was an honest person, because that word keeps coming up. We have to be honest. We need to be honest. Honesty. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I went to my ex-husband, and I said, Charlie, do you think I'm an honest person? And he paused. and I was like, oh, come on. And I was devastated, because what he told me was, and he said, what he said was actually pretty interesting. And I've heard, I think Clancy even say it in a different way, but I get it. He said, I don't know that I think you're dishonest. I think you see the world differently than other people. And I think that's what happens. Alcoholism warps the way we look at the world. And so we have to go through the steps. We have to make the amends so that we begin to see the world more as it is, not how either we want it to be or how we thought it was or whatever. So, and the other thing I will tell you is, since then, I have gone back and made an amends with my first husband. I've made an amends with my second husband. And the going back to Charlie to make that amends, it took the point where it was very, very clear to me why I was making that amends. And I wasn't clear at that point. I needed help with that. And then I also needed to let God get in there and say, and one day the clarity was just there. Oh, now I get it. So the sponsor I had there moved up in this direction, actually. And all of a sudden I was like, now I don't know what to do. And I couldn't hook up with her very easily. So I talked to somebody, and they suggested their sponsor, who, now, why this is different, I don't know. I started talking to her, but that sponsor lived in Indianapolis. Now, why I thought she lived in Indianapolis, somebody lives up in Madison, so I ended up with a sponsor in Indianapolis who I'm very grateful for. She's also passed on since then. But what she taught me an amends process that has always worked for me. And in the amends, what she taught me to do is to, and I would have to write them out before I would go make an amends, which I thought was stupid. I'm an intelligent person. Why do I have to do this? But what it is I've done wrong, you know, how I've harmed that person. Is there anything that I haven't said that you need to tell me that I'm not aware of? And then what can I do to make it right? And one of the amends that I made that just, I mean, absolutely blew me away, and it's simple. These are not necessarily these huge, big things. For some people, they are. But this was something that changed me. And I had gone to a friend that I worked with. At the time, I was doing the SOLs at school, and I was in charge of stuff. And I would get all bent out of shape and everything about that. And I went to a friend of mine, and I went to make the amends for talking badly about somebody else. And because I was told that I needed to do that, which I also thought was a little ridiculous. But I'm so grateful she said, no, this is an amends you need to make. So I went to this friend that I worked with, and I said, this is what I've done, and this is what I've done wrong. Is there anything else that you need to tell me that I'm not aware of? And she didn't say anything. And I said, there is. I was shocked. Honest to goodness, I was shocked. I had no idea. Okay? And so she's like, yeah. And I said, I need to hear it. And she said, I don't want to tell you. And I said, why don't you want to tell me? And she said, because I'm afraid it will hurt our friendship. And I said, I can tell you beyond a doubt that I need to hear what you're going to tell me, and it will not affect our friendship in a negative way at all. And so what she told me was, during SOLs, when I'm like all up in my head and it's all about me and I got to do all this stuff and I'm running around and I'm crazy, she said, I come to you about some things that, and I need some help on something, and you shut me out. She said, what I'm coming to you about is important to me. And she said, I understand that you're busy, and it's okay for you to say to me, I can't get to it right now because I'm busy, but as soon as I have a minute, I will address that and get back with you. It's common courtesy. She was teaching me common courtesy, and that it wasn't all about me. And I said, oh. I said, I had no idea. Okay, so fast forward, the next SOL turn, I do it, and we get a bomb threat or something. So we're all in the back of the school, hanging out, waiting for the school to get cleared. And one of the teachers came up to me, and they said, you know, this SOL time was amazing. They said, you just walked through that. You were so calm. It was so easy. Everything went off so smoothly. That's just really great. And then they walked off, and I thought, oh, my gosh. That's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. That's the change. I became a different person because she was willing to tell me what I was doing wrong, basically. You know, that amends process changed me in the workplace. It doesn't always change me at home, but it does change me in the workplace. So anyway, so I've had amazing things like that happen with amends when I'm willing to go make the amends. And I'll tell another one, because this was also, okay, so when I was a kid growing up, I used to steal the alcohol from my neighbor's house. Not a lot, you know, not that often. Really don't need to do anything about it. You know, kids will be kids kind of thing. Well, that was another one where my sponsor said, yes, you need to make that amends. Well, I didn't for a long time. And then I realized I needed to do that. So I went to the last place I knew he lived, and he wasn't living there anymore. But whoever was I must look like I'm like this really nice person or something. I just introduced my name, and the guy said, oh, come on in, and what are you doing, and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't tell him what I was my purpose, but just that I needed to catch up with this person. Oh, well, I think I've got his address. Let me see if I can get it for you. And you know, he introduced me to his wife, showed me around his house. It was just like, okay, this is like really weird, but okay. So I'll just go with the flow. And so he gave me he called him and said, is it okay if I give this person, told him who I was? He said, absolutely. So I called him. And the time that I called him, he said, I can't do anything right now. Can you call me back in about 30 minutes? He had someplace he had to go, something he had to do. I said, sure. And I'm panicking because, you know, when you're ready to do it, you want to do it. But I called him back in 30, probably waited 40 minutes just to be sure, and called him back. And I explained what I was doing. And I said, you know, I am, and I told him what I was doing. I said, I will come down there face to face. He said, you don't need to do that. And so, all right, so he was like, and I said, well, I need to make the amends. So we talked about that. And then all of a sudden he started talking about his daughter, who I used to babysit. And his daughter was an alcoholic. And they had been estranged for years. And he said, she called me recently and wanted to get together. And I said, well, I don't know what she's doing, but if she's going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, she may be doing what I'm doing now. Only this one is right. He said, well, then I think we need to get together. And I said, absolutely. I never heard what happened with that, but the fact that I called at the same time his daughter was calling, those are powerful things that happen. I believe that's God. When I'm willing to do the deal, I think God just, you know, it wasn't that. And my sponsor used to say, amends are not always about you. I know we hear that a lot. It is because I clear the path. It does clear that path for me. But at that time, it was maybe a little bit more about him than it was about me and his daughter. And so those kinds of things have happened to me a lot. I'm going to tell one more because I think sometimes people get really, really scared about amends. And I cannot guarantee. Now, my oldest sister's the amends with her. That has not worked. Okay. That is a relationship I still do not have a real good relationship with. With my mother, I got another resentment when I made the amends with my mother. So family has been hard for me. That has not been that. So not all of my amends have worked this way. But I had stolen money when I was down there drinking at that bar with all the sailors and stuff, the fishermen. I left my tab. I just walked out. I was drunk. Oh, I'm just going to go. I don't know who I thought was going to pay it, but it certainly wasn't me. And so I left that. And that always kind of, it wasn't a lot of money. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. But the sponsor I had, she said, you need to make amends for that. Because that, and I didn't for a long time. She passed away before one day I was driving home and I went, you know something? I live paycheck to paycheck. At the end of the month, I never quite knew that I was going to have enough money. And I had an okay job, but I still live paycheck to paycheck, you know. And so I thought, I don't have a right to somebody else's money. That was the clarity that I got. I went home, and I had to call a couple people to find out the name of the restaurant, to call the restaurant. And when I called, they were really busy. I said, I need to speak with the owner. And the second time I called, I said, would the owner have been there in 1992, in August? She said, well, she's here too. I went, oh. It was her last day. She had sold the restaurant and was leaving, and it was her absolute last day. So finally, after several calls, I got this woman. Her name was Ginger. I explained what I was doing, and she's like, well, I've never had that happen before. And I thought, you know, she's never going to remember my name. She's never going to remember who I am, but what she is going to remember is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous made an amends. You know, and so what she knows about AA will be something positive if that comes up at some point in time down the road, not necessarily for her, but just for anybody, you know. So I asked her, I said, what is the most expensive thing, all the alcohol anybody ever drinks, what would the tab be? And so I don't remember what the number was now. So I wrote the check out, got the address, wrote the check out to send to her. And my husband at the time, who's also in the program, he came in and I told him what had happened. And he said, how much did you write it for? And I said, well, this is the number she gave me. He said, double it. He said, you've had her money for a long time. I thought, he's right. So I doubled it, put it in, sent it. Never heard anything from that. Have absolutely no idea what happened. But I did call Captain Whalen, who saved my life, I believe, that night. And I got him on the phone. I didn't know whether he'd be dead or alive, actually. And what he said to me was, I am so glad. And I told him I was sober. And I'd been sober for 10, 11, 12 years. And I said, I don't know why I waited. Amends to me is one of those things where I have to know in my heart why I'm doing. I have to do it for the right reasons. And for me, it's been a very slow process. I know for other people, they get right in there and they do them immediately. That's just not been my experience. So when I called him, he was very grateful to hear from me. He remembered that event, that probably remembered my sailor's tongue. And he said, I often wondered what happened to you. And I'm glad to know that you're sober, and I'm glad to know that you're safe and that you're okay. So I don't know if you'd call that amends, but at least, you know, letting someone know, you know, that and to thank him for saving me that night, because he absolutely saved me. Without that, would I have gone through or even be standing here? I don't know. I really have no idea. So, today I'm... about 8 years ago, I went through a divorce with my second husband, and it was devastating. But things happen, and as long as I stay in the program and I stay sober, I get to see things grow. Today, I went to my home group because it meets at 10 o'clock on Sundays. So I went to my home group on January 1st, and it was about... my mind just went blank. I said it earlier. Freedom. You know, we have a new freedom and a new happiness from the ninth step promises. I called a friend of mine that was in the program that I hadn't seen in a couple of days to check on her, and she was fine. She had traveled a little bit. I went home to the gentleman that I am now living with, who is also in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was brought me up here today, and a dog. We have okay, so when John and I got together, he had a dog. The dog's name was Ebby Thatcher. All right, so anybody that knows the history knows that, okay, Ebby Thatcher. So Ebby was well known in the AA community. People loved Ebby, but she passed away this year, and so the decision was to go turn pretty quickly and we got a puppy in July. I have not had a puppy in a very long time, and I'm not sure what the kitchen's going to look like when we get home, but we'll see. So her name is Marty Mann. And if you are not, Marty Mann's like the first woman in AA to get sober. So she is Miss Marty, Marty Mann. And we got a card from somebody that says, "My name is No No Bad Dog." So that, so I get to go home to that this evening, you know. I am part of the AA community in Stanton, and I've been there for 8 years. I've bought a home. I've had 2 jobs since I've been there. I'm back in education, which is my field, and I'm grateful to be back there. I have good friends. Now, one of the things that I've done, and I am going to mention this because this is sort of against AA, although I heard a speaker that talked to it, and actually my sponsor today is a male sponsor. I had a hard time finding a woman with time and what I wanted. So this is an individual that I worked with. So they knew my work ethic. They knew kind of how crazy I could get sometimes because they saw me all the way. And they knew some other things that I had been through also. And so he is married. I asked him if he would ask his wife first. He did. And she and I are friends. So she just sort of, things like that don't bother her, I suppose. And I guess if they ever do, then that will be the end of that relationship. But he has been my sponsor for the past, I think, 2 years. I will tell you this. I am still looking for a female sponsor because as much as I love this gentleman, he's been a very, very good sponsor to me. He's been a good friend to me. I do believe in women with women and men with men. I did hear a speaker in Richmond, and she had also had some men sponsors, and she said she'd have a male sponsor, but then the time would come where you need to have a female. So I've put that out there to God, and I feel like God will open that door up when the time is right. So we hear so many things in AA, and I can put things into a box to a point, and then I've got to open that box up because not all things work exactly the way that I think that they're going to work. I don't think, for whatever reason, this is my path right now, and I can accept that as long as I am doing exactly, doing the things that I'm supposed to do. I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not be standing up here if it weren't for you guys. And I say you guys because you guys are the you guys that were there when I was there. I mean, the faces may change, but the heart is there and the desire to help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. That part never changes. I don't care what room you walk into. So I'm glad to be back here, and I wish you guys a happy 2017, and who knows what will happen the next time. So thank you. Thanks.